Welcome to the Six Figure Business Mastery Podcast, where every week, Kirsten and Jeannie dive into the essential topics to fuel your business growth. From copywriting to course creation, mindset to video marketing, they've got you covered. Tune in for expert guest interviews on all things marketing and business, and learn how to work on your business, not just in it. So, get ready to unlock your business potential and take it to the next level.
Creativity isn't just a spark of inspiration. It's a science-backed process. And Haley Forrest is here today to break down how your brain, strategy, and even AI can fuel your next big idea. So welcome to our show, Haley Forrest.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Hey, Haley. I know we were introduced by Diane, and I'm so excited to have you have this conversation with us, because how did you get into the psychology of creativity? Like, was that a major, like, I'm going to pick this. This looks interesting. Like, how does one get into the psychology of creativity?
Well, I mean, it's actually kind of the opposite of what you'd imagine. I grew up going to a very like artsy, hippie school where, you know, we had to do all of the art things. So sewing, drawing, painting, dancing, woodwork. I mean, honestly, you kind of name it. I am not good at art. I am not an artist. In fact, I would never call myself a creative. And so everyone in my life around me would always say like, oh, Haley, you're so creative. Why don't you do something with that? And I'd always stare at them and be like, I don't know what you're looking at, because I don't think my art is anywhere close to monetizable. Fast forward, and I kept on running to the same conversation. And then one day, one of my professors, I ended up going to grad school much later in life. I mean, much is really a relative term, let's be honest. Went to grad school a little bit later, took a bit of a break. And my professor said, Haley, you think about things differently. You approach problems from angles that your classmates don't even think to look at. And that kind of got my brain thinking, okay, well, that's kind of creative, quote unquote, isn't it? And I started to think, does the brain actually go through a different process when making art than doing process or innovation? And lo and behold, it does.
I love that. I love that. I actually have a son who's in art school, and, you know, and back in the day, they kind of poo-pooed art school, you know, oh, it's just, you know, for people who want to dance, or, you know, it's not really, you know, rich with English and math and things. But it's so interesting because the school is all about problem solving. And like you said, seeing things from a different perspective. So oftentimes, like, you know, hospitals or, you know, or other, you know, big organizations will be stuck on an issue, a problem, and they'll bring in an art student to help them think differently. So I love that.
That's really what it is. And I think that is something that a lot of people don't recognize, that like I had a conversation with my friend's husband who's in tech, and I was talking about why learning about how our brains make creative thoughts is so important. And he said, yeah, but by the time we're doing all of the debugging and we're figuring out all of the problems, I was like, yeah, because he's already planted the lead. And he goes, well, you know, all the creative stuff's already done. And I said, well, those problems you just mentioned, how do you work on those? And he went, oh, I guess I see what you're talking about. And that's pretty sheepish, thankfully. That's what it is. It's I always try to, when I'm doing my research, I try to frame the idea of creative thinking as problem solving, partially to get people out of that mindset of thinking like how I did, I'm not a creative. And what does creativity have to do with it? It's like, well, we problem solve every day. That's creative thinking.
And earlier you used the word innovation. I think you have to be very creative to innovate and think about bringing things into the world that no one else has ever created. And so whether that's, we always used to joke that little piece of plastic that kept the top from squishing the pizza, you know, like, right. Or you think about all these different, like really weird little things that we encounter in our lives. We're like, I don't know who thought of that, but it's genius. You know, we don't, it's almost irrelevant in the big picture of life, but wow, when applied here, it makes a big difference. So I think that's all about, like you said, creativity and innovation. So
I mean, an example very similar to that was, I'm not a fast food person particularly, but when you're on a road trip, it's kind of, you know, required. It's the tradition. I'm personally a Taco Bell person because I grew up in California and tacos. I'm also in Mexico. So if that doesn't tell you, I love tacos. But I remember we went to Burger King and the fries come in this container that fits in the cup holder in a car. And I looked down, I was like, oh, that's so cool. My friend just looked at me like, what are you on about? I'm like, why doesn't every fast food company do this? This just makes sense. I mean, obviously it's patented, I get it. But like, I looked at him and said, A, this came from a marketing department. And B, this is a really cool innovation. And he just didn't quite. I mean, I had to go through the process and explain it to him, but for me, my mind was blown by a cup holder French fry container.
Same way. I mean, I don't know about you, but I look at all these different businesses and I think, you know, if you're in business, you always look at a business a little differently, like, wow, that's a great idea. Or, you know, what are their profit margins or how do they run that side of the business? Like, you're always just thinking about these things. And there are so many things out there that, you know, I would never think of. So it's so amazing when you think that we all have this ability to bring great ideas and innovation to the marketplace. And something simple like having your fries held or your pizza not getting squished. I think we have a theme here. It's food. But how do you like these things? Like, again, it's not, we haven't cured cancer, but at the same time, it's all of these things that make a difference in our day-to-day lives and make them easier. But I think it's also when you think about curing disease, I think that's also someone who's going to be a very creative person, right? Problem
Yes,
solving. Yeah.
absolutely. I mean, the way that I kind of look at innovation is it's true innovation, and the best innovation is that combination between usefulness and novelty. And that really connects to our brain, hey, because different parts of our brain process and develop those two different, I mean, obviously there's overlap here, but like their core strengths ex exist in different parts of the brain. And so when I'm looking at how do we improve the innovation process, I am then looking at how can we utilize those separate parts of the brain to play better together.
And are you talking about like cognitive thinking versus creative thinking?
I mean, so the different parts of your brain that really make ideas. I think a lot of people are aware of the executive control network or executive functions, particularly if you've ever been diagnosed with ADHD or have learned anything really about it. Hi, I have ADHD. I didn't find out until recently. No one was surprised. But that part of your brain is the structure. It is the lists and timelines and, keeping things on track. I am incredibly time blind. Oh my God. That's why I have an Apple Watch, because if it doesn't tell me when I need to do things, it doesn't exist in my brain. But that part of your brain, which is in like the prefrontal cortex, that is the part of your brain that goes, what is something that is useful? How can I fix this com this particular, how can I fix this particular thing using something that makes sense? If we just did things that made sense, it'd all be really, really boring. And we wouldn't really call that innovation. So there is the other part of your brain, and we sometimes talk about how, why is it the best ideas happen when you're in the shower? Or when for me, it's often driving or walking or just doing something kind of random that doesn't really have anything to do with anything. And all of a sudden, that aha moment happens. And that's a different part of your brain. It's a collection, it's a network. It's called the default mode network. And if you think about that phrase, default mode, we think about what does our computer do when we're not actively using it? It kind of goes on to standby and there's stuff whirring around in the background, but it's not doing anything particularly active. And so the default mode network, when we're not actively working on thing, it just starts taking ideas that you've seen and experienced and kind of just starts percolating and starts putting pieces together. And that's where your really creative ideas come from. That's the mind wandering network of your brain. So it's this combination of that's where the novelty comes from. Because if it's just novel but not useful, well, you'll use it once and be like, well, that was a waste of money, or whatever. We've all bought those little tchotchke things that were like, that's really cool and doesn't actually work the way it's supposed to, or doesn't actually make sense to use. Or the thing that's really, really useful, that's really boring. That's where those two networks come in.
Wow. And do we have the ability to tap into either side of that consciously?
Funny story. So, because it's really, really convenient to be able to think of creative ideas, no. The default mode network does not come when summoned. It only works when you're actively trying. Well, I want to say actively trying not to use it, but when you're not trying to use it, when you're not doing anything. In fact, when you're minding your own business, the default mode network is like, cool, I'm going to go and play now. Yay. And what's also interesting is for a neurotypical person, these two networks cannot work at the same time. They're on and off, kind of like, a brake and a clutch. If you've ever driven an automatic or a manual car, a stick shift. And ADHD people and some other neurodivergence people, they can work at the same time, which is why we get distracted really, really hard and can go into hyperfocus mode and then other hyperfocus mode and then other hyperfocus mode because we are fascinated by everything. And there's other things as well, but like that's a very shortened version of what goes on in those moments.
I'm laughing because we're both ADD. We didn't get the H. We just had
Well,
the A and the two D's.
what's actually really interesting is it's all one thing now. Is
Okay.
so for ADD, the way that women present, I know this is not on topic, but it's something that I am very passionate about because I like to learn things basically. And once I found out that I had it, I was like, cool, let's go learn all the things. How do I make my life easier? And so in women in particular, ADHD presents as what we think of as ADD. The hyperactivity component often isn't there. And part of that, there's a question of how much of that is socialized and how much of that is chemical. Because women, from the time we were little girls, were always told to sit still and to do our thing. And it often presents in women as inattentive. So our mind is the active part. Our mind is the thing that's off with the fairies. And our physicalness is sitting at our desks, doing our thing, probably not paying attention. And then except for maybe just the one little like knee tap, or for me in class, I do this. I swivel. If I have a swivel chair, so help everyone around me. And then there is what we think of as classic ADHD, which is often attributed to young boys. In fact, for a long time, they thought women couldn't have it at all, and that adults couldn't have it, that you grew out of it. But really what it was is that the executive control and well, the prefrontal cortex, which is reasoning, doesn't fully develop till your mid-20s. So they, people grow up and suddenly have the impulse control to sit still.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you definitely.
I like the term mind wandering network. I feel very akin to that.
I mean, that's what they say is that inattentive ADHD, I heard this just the other day, referred to as chronic mind wandering. And I was like, yeah.
I totally see that. Now, let me ask you this. Is there a correlation between ADD or ADHD and creativity?
So, yes, but with the caveat that obviously a lot of it is correlational, not necessarily, we can't definitively say causational. Part of that is for people with ADHD. I swear this talk was not meant to be about ADHD. It's just something I'm vibrantly passionate about because life. So, part of the thing that makes the two networks work in tandem is a thing called the salience network. And that's kind of like a mixing board or like a sound thing that goes, okay, it's like a dial on a radio where it goes, okay, now we're tuning into you. And now we're going to tune into you. And when you have ADHD, it gets a little bit lazy. So it kind of tunes sort of into that in-between space a little bit more, which is kind of when I talk about both networks working at once, as well as people with ADHD have a decreased latent inhibition. So, we talk about like when you have a couple drinks and your inhibition is lowered and you kind of do or say things that might be totally genuine, but you probably wouldn't have done in your right mind. So think about it like that, but in terms of your latent inhibition in your brain decides what's important and what you should remember. So people with ADHD have a decreased latent inhibition, which means everything becomes of equal importance. Obviously, not everything, and there's a vast spectrum. But for instance, if the average person saw the sky was blue, I mean, if anyone sees the sky's blue, they're like, cool, the sky's blue. We know this. Don't need to remember. If the sky was orange, you'd remember that. If you're walking down the street and you see, like, there's this really strange cactus thing over here that in my brain, probably a normal person goes, yeah, cactus, whatever. For me, I'm like, that's so cool. I'm going to remember that cactus. I have no reason to remember that cactus, but it's been tagged in my brain by my essentially lowered level of inhibition as that might be important. You should remember that, which that can be also connected to creative thinking, because a lot of creative thinking is where do you get these really far distant ideas and connect them together to make something new? So that's what I mean by yes and no.
Well, it's interesting. I think this conversation is extremely relevant because I think so many entrepreneurs and business owners are definitely, we're dyslexic. We have ADHD. Like, I feel like, we can't follow along the typical path of life. So here we are. But I think it's also like we see the world so differently. And so finding solutions and figuring out ways to make things happen. And when you were talking about the blue sky, the cactus, the orange sky, then all of a sudden I was seeing an orange sky with a cactus behind it, right? Like it just goes into that place. And now I'll remember that. I don't know why, but I will. So I think a lot of entrepreneurs are definitely probably will benefit from this conversation.
It's funny. I'm currently in Mexico, and I'm hanging out with my mom for probably the most extended period of time I have since, I moved out of the house when I was 17. And I asked her at one point. I said, what do you observe that I have grown, and what has changed, and what is still the same? Just out of curiosity. I mean, she's known me my whole life, obviously. And one of the things she said is that A, I've become more patient, or I don't get frustrated to the same degree. And my, neuroscience brain goes, ah, because I've learned a little bit more of my executive control and like how to control my frustrations and how to reframe the way I view things. And the other thing she said is like, even when you were 4 and 5 years old, you would see me frustrated by something. And then you'd say, but mom, why don't you do it like this? And how she would turn to me and go, yeah, you're absolutely right. I was overthinking and didn't see it that way. So I've always kind of been able to do that, I guess.
That's interesting. I've got a pillow that says I'm not bossy. I just have better ideas that my sister-in-law gave me. And so I think that is that like you said, you just automatically see things. Oh, you could do it this way. And so it can make us feel very bossy.
And it can also make you feel crazy at times, because I definitely have memories of giving ideas and everyone looking at me like I was a crazy person, which for me, I always kind of shrugged it off and was like, yeah, I'm quirky, whatever, which is fortunate because that meant I never kind of internalized any sense of shame about it. I was just like, I'm the weird one. Yay, I have more fun. But for a lot of people who think differently, they're often shamed for it. And a lot of that is the culture of, you're not allowed to be wrong. You're not allowed to know all the to not know all the answers. And that's so counter against creativity, especially in business.
Being
Small fly.
attacked by a mosquito.
No, oh God, I have been, but no, that was just a small fly trying to be friends. But like by creating a culture, either internally or if you have a business within your business, of mistakes are okay as long as you're able to learn from them. I really believe in doing pre and postmortems on projects, beforehand saying what could go wrong and how do we prevent it? And afterwards, what didn't go the way we wanted it to? Acknowledge that, normalize the discussion of it, because then you don't hide things and you can learn from it.
Yeah, even when things go really well, there's things if you have a conversation, someone on the outside sees something. Well, if we did it this way, we've gotten there sooner or with less steps or maybe spent less money. And so I think it is important to ask, what didn't go as planned and the things that did go well, is there any way we could have improved them? So I think that's so smart. I do, one of the things I think I love about being in the business world is people are more, I think we are more open to failure, right? We have a much higher risk tolerance, and we know that the more we fail, the more likely we are to succeed. And I think that's become way more normalized in our society. Do you agree, Jeannie? Like you feel like it's more prevalent?
Yeah, I do. And it's certainly more prevalent in entrepreneurship and business owner versus 9 to 5, two totally separate things happening. So let's tell us a little bit about how AI is kind of can integrate into creativity, because I know there's a lot of creatives who say, you're taking our jobs away, you're ruining things for us. And then there's other people who are embracing it and doing different things with it. So let's talk a little bit about AI.
So I have always been an early adopter. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. So that was just kind of a way of life. Technology was always something interesting and cool. And I mean, the interesting thing to think about when it comes to AI is, A, we've all been using AI already for ages. We have been playing with Siri on our phones, and that's AI. We've been using spell check. that's AI. And that is not scary in the way that we sometimes think of AI being these days. So the way that I kind of like to approach AI when thinking as a creative, I used to be a journalist and a writer, and this is before the time that we had, ChatGPT and all that. So, it was a different experience. But there are times when, like, I'm also a solopreneur and I work alone a lot, and I don't have many people in my world that I can bounce ideas off of that understand what I'm talking about with, neurotransmitters and whatnot. And that's fine. I don't expect most people to understand off the, top of their minds about, these types of brain networks. But I can say, hey, I'm thinking of a thing. Like, I'll go into any of the large language models and be like, I'm thinking of a thing. And I'll explain it and say, like, okay, I'm thinking about a thing kind of like this. Could that possibly connect to this? And then AI will say, well, you could be thinking about this, 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 this. And I go, not quite. And I can start refining. And it's like, it's having a thought partner. It is having something that I can bounce ideas off of, and it can help guide me. And occasionally, then I'll be like, okay, you just gave me five options. Two seems in the direction of where I want to go. Can you spin off some ideas from there? And again, it's this back and forth. So that's like one example of how AI can really help you when you are developing creative ideas. Another thing is, while AI doesn't have the answers yet, I think we're a lot farther away from like true, AI in that sense, but it can put together ideas that you won't. And they might not entirely make sense. But when we are in that creative process, I mean, I often joke that like, in the beginning of things, there's no bad ideas. There are bad ideas. There are terrible ideas. There are lots of them. The thing is, we need them more than we think we do. Instead of just tossing them out with, before they even see the light of day, because often we're like, oh no, that's a bad idea. And we don't even mention it. But instead of doing that, like, don't throw spaghetti at the wall, throw spaghetti into a pile on the floor. You're not trying to see what sticks. We're not there yet. And so AI can provide that pile of bad ideas. At then you can start piecing through and going, okay, this is a really bad idea, this one point of it is maybe a good idea. It is the three generations down from that really bad idea that might be the perfect idea and might start making connections that you would have not done because you're too logical, because you know too much. The best ideas come often, okay, not the best ideas. That's a bit, I don't know, overly optimistic of me, but some of the most interesting ideas come from people outside of the industry, and in this case that can be AI, but they don't know what's possible, so nothing is impossible. And that kind of idea generation can open avenues of thought that we would have never gotten to on our own, or it would have taken a lot longer.
I love that. We have a mastermind group that meets every Monday, and one of the ladies, she's been thinking about doing a podcast for quite a while, and she had reached out to me to say, "Hey, can we have lunch or grab dinner to talk about how would I monetize this podcast, just get more clarity around it?" Before we have, because we're meeting tonight, so we haven't had a chance to meet. She ended up spending like an entire day and a half having conversations with chat. And she said it was just, it was layers and layers and layers and layers of this conversation and just asking, well, what about this? Well, what about that? Well, could we do this? Could we do that? And she feels like she has a pretty solid idea of how she's going to launch and monetize the podcast. And so I'm excited to talk with her tonight and learn more about how she did that. But I think it's patience and it's peeling an onion, right? It's not like you're asking a question and aha, you get this great answer. She just kept asking questions from every single direction and then kind of taking notes and thinking about things and then coming back and asking more questions. But she was over the moon excited about like this great conversation that she and Chad had. And like you said, it was a thought partner. That's what she used chat as, was a thought partner. And I think that's a very good way to label it.
Yeah, and she was, like you said, she was so excited because she'd been stuck for a really long time on, do I go this way? Do I go that way? And wasn't able to think fully through the thoughts and the ideas. Sometimes you just get in that circle and you just go round and round and round and round and you never get out of it. So yeah, she was so excited. Like Kirsten said, she spent a day and a half talking to chat to, kind of develop her ideas and feel good about whatever direction, she chose.
And it's interesting because, like, again, my mother, she, what I'll say to her sometimes, she'll ask me a question. I'm like, you should ask, either I say Google that because that's what I would do half the time, but also, why don't you put it into a chat bot and see what it does? She goes, well, I bet it wouldn't even know what to ask it. I said, well, how would you ask me? And she goes, well, I was like, the nice thing about large language models that have, natural language processing, which is basically, it's exactly what it sounds like. It processes natural language like you and I do. So you can have a conversation about what you're trying to say. Like I said in my first example, I'm thinking about something that's kind of like, I don't even know what the question is yet, but it can help me refine. When we talk about ideas, it's divergent thinking and convergent thinking. It can help me refine my idea so I know what question to even ask. Because sometimes you have to start in this, ethereal, ephemeral, that's the word I was looking for, ephemeral space where you just don't know even where to look or what to ask yet. And it can help guide you through ways that maybe you wouldn't have quite figured out on your own.
I love it. If so, I'm going to just ask, if someone wants to reach out to you and learn more about working with you, how do they do that?
So a couple places. I'm on LinkedIn. So Haley Forrest, see my little smiling face there. Otherwise, I have a website which is hcforrest.com, and you can reach out to me there. The funny thing is, H and Forrest obviously is Haley and Forrest, and C, I don't have a middle name. But once upon a time, I was a DJ for a number of years, and obviously, my DJ name was Haley Comet. So therefore, it is Haley Comet Forrest, but HC Forrest.
I love it.
Fantastic. Haley, we are so excited that you joined us today. Thank you so much. This has been so fun to talk about creativity and even ADHD and AI and how it kind of all can work together. So thanks again for joining us.
I know we went a little off topic, but I mean that's how the brain and the creative process really goes. So I appreciate you guys, you ladies. I appreciate you ladies taking the time to talk through this all with me.
Thanks for listening to the Six Figure Business Mastery Podcast. If you enjoyed listening to this episode and you are ready to leverage video marketing on all online platforms, or maybe even start your own video podcast, then you need to check out the Done For You and Done With You program at themarketingvaadvantage.com and take your business to the next level.